You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. As usual, I'm your host, Handel. I'll be with you until 8 p.m. this evening on this cloudy Sunday evening here in the capital, coming to you from our Ventuk studio live and direct for another fun, engaging edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. As always, make sure to be following us on all of our social media pages. That is Facebook, that is X, that is Instagram, that is LinkedIn, that is WhatsApp. If you'd like to follow the WhatsApp channel, simply send a WhatsApp message to 081-200-4144, and you will have access to our WhatsApp channel for on the minute, on the second updates, on all the important things that you need to know. And that is also the same number you should save in your mobile device if you'd like to subscribe to the Villager newspaper. And if you missed any of the previous broadcasts of the Eagle Sports Zone, such as last week's episode where we interviewed Roger Searin, where we interviewed Leema Dopolo, then fear not. All you have to do is go to the Eagle FM website. That's www.eaglefm.com.na, or download the Eagle FM mobile application. That'll cost you a total of $0 and 0 Namibian cents. And if you access one of these two platforms, you will have access to our wonderful podcast library. So if you missed any broadcast, not just the Eagle Sports Zone, if you missed any show on Eagle FM, or you'd like to listen back to a show once again, then simply follow the instructions I just provided to you a few seconds ago. Go to the podcast section and type in the name of the episode that it is you're looking for, and you can enjoy your favorite show at your pace whenever you want to. And you can listen to us from wherever you are in the world, thanks to our great mobile application as well as our website. So to everyone listening from South Africa, everyone listening from the USA, everyone listening from Germany, everyone listening from China, from Australia, from Brazil, welcome, welcome to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. Now, we start off with some local sporting news, but seeing that it is about to be Easter weekend, the first holiday really on the calendar for 2026, it is going to be a long weekend here in the capital, so a lot of these sports are winding down, local sports at least, are winding down. In anticipation for that much needed break. So there hasn't been any local football. There hasn't been really any major local sport of note, so to say. However, we being the Brave Warriors did play against Comoros in the FIFA series tournament. This series tournament that FIFA created to allow smaller nations to play against each other, it has created some interesting matchups around the world. Teams that ordinarily wouldn't be up against each other. But we had Namibia face Comoros that ended 0-0 in full time, and Namibia won it 5-4 on penalties. So the Brave Warriors somewhat back to winning ways after the defeat in the first match of this series, where they lost to Kazakhstan. So back to winning ways for the Brave Warriors. And it is also international break in international football, which is why the Brave Warriors are playing. But club football did not occur because of this, because all the nations are engaged, whether it's in international friendlies or in the FIFA series or in FIFA World Cup qualification, which the playoffs are currently taking place. But some selected friendly scores. We had Portugal up against Mexico that ended 0-0. Belgium beat USA 5-2. Scotland lost 1-0 to Japan. We had Zimbabwe and Botswana faced off against each other, and Zimbabwe took that 3-0. Cote d'Ivoire beat South Korea 4-0. Then you had Malawi up against Zambia, that ended in a 0-0 draw as well. Argentina narrowly, narrowly beat Mauritania by a score of 2-1. Spain took care of Serbia 3-0. Germany played an entertaining fixture against Switzerland, that ending 4-3. Uruguay, thanks to a last-minute penalty from Captain Valverde, drew with England 1-1. And Egypt thumped Saudi Arabia 4-0. The Black Stars lost to Austria 5-1. And that is all we had in terms of international football as teams prepare for the World Cup. Some preparing to qualify for the World Cup and others just looking to get a run out and perhaps improve their FIFA ranking. As always, you can call into the studio at 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. And on the other side of this brief commercial break coming up, we will get into our first talking point of the show. We'll be back right on the other side of this.
Celebrate Namibia's Independence Month with amazing deals at Exodus Investment CC. Get solar lights for just 100 Namibian dollars. We also stock CCTV Wi-Fi cameras, TV mounts, DSTV and GoTV satellite TV accessories, plus replacement remotes for TVs, air conditioners and many other electronic accessories only at Exodus Investment CC. Visit us today at Shop 7 Blackchain Shopping Center in Katutura next to Bank Bentuk. We are open daily, including public holidays, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. for your convenience. Call or WhatsApp 081-31-91-395 and find us on social media. Exodus Investment CC, your trusted store for quality electronics and accessories. Hurry! Our Independence Special runs until the 30th of April 2026. And remember, Exodus Investment CC. We courier countrywide. Call us now.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. As I said, we will briefly touch on some things happening on the continent, and that is the Basketball Africa League. The 2026 season is underway. For those that don't know, the Basketball Africa League is sort of the African division of the NBA. That is the National Basketball Association, one of the biggest sporting leagues in the world, has a dedicated African leg, and we'll talk about some things you'll need to know about this season that is currently underway. I believe they're in week number three. But it did start this week. It started on a Friday and it will run all the way up until the 31st of May. It is a 12-team club competition that will take place across three African cities. The first six teams to take to the floor in what they're calling the Kalahari Conference, that it will consist of the Johannesburg Giants from South Africa, Petro de Luanda. I'm sure a lot of us are famous with them, are familiar with them, excuse me. They are from Angola. Al Ahly Lee from Libya. Then you have the Nairobi City Thunder, that is from Kenya. The Dar City, that is from Tanzania. And the RSSB Tigers from our favorite nation, that is Rwanda, will compete from the 27th of March until the 5th of April. That is in South Africa, in Pretoria, at the SunBet Arena. Then the other six teams in the Sahara Conference, they're calling it, is Al Ahly from Egypt, the JCA Giants, that is from Ivory Coast, Club African, that is from Tunisia, the FUS Rabat, obviously Morocco, the Mactown Flyers, excuse me, that will be from Nigeria, and Ville de Dakar from Senegal. They will compete at the Prince Mouli Abdellah Sports Complex over in Morocco. That is from the 24th of April until the 3rd of May. Now, I yearn for the day, I hope for the day, that a Namibian nation will compete a Namibian team, excuse me, will compete in this tournament. Great, great tournament, great initiative, and an exciting thing for the continent to have. Perhaps next week we will do our best to get in touch with a guest from the Basketball Africa League, and we'll chat some continental basketball. This will be the 6th edition of the Basketball Africa League. And for the first time in the league's history, 3 former MVPs are expected to play in the same season. With these 3 individuals, we're talking about Mike Dixon, who basically, by himself almost, won US Morning Star the title in 2022 season. He now plays for Club African. We have Joe Luol and Jean Boissy. These are the 2024 and 2025 most valuable players. And they both now play for the Libyan champions Al Ahly Li. And interestingly enough, the team that won the league last year won't have the opportunity to defend their title. That is Al Ahly Tripoli, who won the league last season. They will not be defending the title because they finished 2nd in the Libyan league in that league play. So the Basketball Africa League is only for the champions in their respective nations. And of the 12 teams that are playing in the competition, 5 of them will be debutants. That is Club African, that is Junis Club, Dajiban, Mactown Flyers, Dar City, and the Johannesburg Giants will all be playing in the competition for the very first time. So next season I hope to be reading about a Namibian team that has qualified for this tournament. Now, let's get to our first talking point of the day, which is a piece that we're gonna watch, or rather listen to, about basically the pipeline from schoolboy to Springbok. So how a young South African rugby player goes from the school system all the way into the professional, and how this system is designed is what we're going to get from this. So let's take a listen to that, and we'll discuss it when we get back.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Our latest production, alongside the team of 22 Hours, is here. And for this one, we wanted to answer one big question. How does a country at the tip of Africa become back-to-back Rugby World Cup champions and the greatest ever rugby nation? The key is one of the most robust but difficult sporting pipelines in the world. Let's take a deep dive into the journey from schoolboy to Springbok. From bustling cities to remote villages, young boys with dreams of rugby glory navigate a system fraught with challenges and opportunities. Schoolboy rugby has thrived in South Africa for over 150 years, and some derbies put professional sports to shame, drawing over 20,000 watching fans. To understand the schoolboy to Springbok pipeline, we begin in Easter and festival season.
You talk a little, not just with your mouth!
With your mouth!
This guy down, he was not!
With your son!
There's a lady, and it's
an Easter!
It's again an opportunity to get boys to play, for universities to come out. This is where boys also just get that sort of lifeline. There might also be a lot of franchise recruiters coming through. The competition is very, very, very strong.
And it's changed compared to our times. As I said, cost management part and parcel of this. But something else has changed. I mean, I've got a young daughter, and I think something like super sports schools makes it easy for us parents to see. Even the kids get interested.
It's a widely held belief that the South African schoolboy rugby setup is the most professional in the world. The success this brings attracts sponsors, and one such school is Paul Roos Gymnasium, which has over 30 sponsors, more than most professional teams. But there's another side to this pipeline, where passion and talent are held back by circumstance.
Scuba rugby is strong in South Africa. It's well supported, it's well tracked. It's probably the best running sort of structure in the world. The amount of players that we are developing is just incredible. And I'm sure there is some sort of a stat where there's about 900 players, South African players playing overseas professionally. And that's just the health. A state of the health of where we are and how good that is for competition, yeah.
There's two sides to the system. There's the great side of the system, which is systematically built, it's well supported. And then on the other side of the system, the black player perspective, the stories that should be impossible.
You gotta realize how many Makazolas missed out, how many has got so close. Tiger Mangweni, when you talk of a Makazole, so say this being who comes so close, Kumani Boy. I met Kumani Boy, couldn't pass on the left-hand side. Yeah, I said, no, but you got to pass this way. You know, so Tiger anyway asked for a lift. The bus drops us off in town. And I had an old normal car. Jolonga is the place. And I drive from East London town. I realized that, boss, my car won't make it up there now. We've done the dirt road, so up there won't make it. Gets up the car, says, oh, and you see that little light there? That's where my house is at. So Makazole makes it at the back end of thousands who've come so close. Thousands were shut down by the system. And shutting down by system could be language. I mean, I get to the Lions, the lineouts were in Afrikaans. I was talking straight to the boys, we're carrying Afrikaans. I'm just not going to happen. I will never understand. I can't. You make a call, I almost got to translate and throw. It's just not going
to
happen.
You cannot even go to pay other. There's a problem of infrastructure. The cars cannot go to another area because the roads are so poor. The roads are bad and poor. And if they're going to pay in some other, you have to provide food for them because it's a disadvantage. Very well, that is
in the Makazole Mapimpi story. There's some really unique people in his story who did see his talent early on, and he was very lucky to be exposed to those people, even though that he wasn't in a very traditional rugby environment at all. He was still exposed to people who had a great passion for the game and who also understood and saw his talent. And I think that is important in any way in life, you know, whether it's athletics, whether it's, you know, whatever sports we speak about, it's, you know, being exposed to someone who has the ability to see your talent and understand, you know, what it is that makes you special.
In 1999, the South African government tried to equalize the system and compel the unions to provide opportunities to players of color by implementing quotas. Between 2015 and 2019, these transformation targets have steadily risen from 30 to 50% of the Springboks being players of color. Firstly, your thought on the system as a player having been trying to go through that system, being called a quota player maybe. And then on the other side, was it a crutch that many used to leave the country to say, I can't play because of quota systems, or were they really just not good enough to play in the first place?
The only guy I'd say left definitely was there was Tian Strauss. Tian competed with France for the captaincy, leadership of the Springboks, goes and played for Australia. Everyone else after that could have, should have. Coaches. The easy escape was that, but it's the quota system. So I couldn't tell you straight, listen, boss, you haven't got it. So the bailout for coaches was that. So you're telling me everybody left was a winger? You know, you pack up and you leave. Where do you go? So give me a player who packed up, left, went to New Zealand, made it. Yeah, so for me, it was an excuse. When you take all those players that have left and currently go toe-to-toe with the current Springboks, black, white, green, yellow, where do they fit on game day? You sitting at home as a genuine rugby person, I say pick a team. But you could come from the right is of right, the left of left. What's in front of you, chances are you wouldn't pick off the players that left. Fact. Yeah.
In 2016, research on registered rugby players in South Africa found that there were over 400,000 players, with the majority of these players being people of color. The pipeline is changing to include many more players from previously disadvantaged areas. An investment in these areas from funders such as FNB is bearing fruit.
FNB Classic Clashes Festival, which we've piloted in the Eastern Cape, and we're trying to get that model right. And that gives the opportunity to under-resourced schools in the Eastern Cape, from all across the Eastern Cape. We've already had two players who were scouted by universities, so they've literally gone from the Classic Clashes Festival into Varsity Cup, into Varsity Shield. We've also had one player who was selected straight by the union into the SA under-20s.
You know, if you look at a World Cup squad, you know, Makazola, Mani Liebach, Lukanya Arm, various others, I mean, in fact, more and more in that Springbok setup don't come from these traditional environments, and we're still catching that talent. And I think that's testament to the school system, the breadth of the festivals and the events that are taking place. At the end of the day, what you want is kids participating, getting the chance to play. If you have any idea about what talent looks like, or whether you're a coach or a selector, when you see it, you know what you're seeing, you know. So we've just, the Super Sport Schools partnered with Lincoln Marley on a wonderful festival down in the Eastern Cape, the Zondile Marley Rugby Tournament, which they've just operated, and it's really about township and rural schools, kids that ordinarily just don't get a chance at all to participate in festivals and events. And off the back of that, they've chosen, I think, 23, 25 that are going to travel to the United Kingdom on a three-week tour, go and play clubs and various other institutions over there. So there's no foolproof way. There's no way that you're always going to put the talented kid in front of the right person at the right time in life. There's, you know, and I think that's true of any sports system in the world. You know, that's, at the end of the day, there's a bit of luck involved in all of these things. But we don't do a bad, you know, we don't do the best job, but we actually don't do a bad job, because we still keep finding these gems all the time.
So, I mean, obviously F&B can't solve everything in rugby, but I think what has been put in place is really effective, and you can see it in the results. I mean, over 100 just from Classic Clashes Springbok players, 54 Springbok players out of Varsity Cup and Shield. And I think that in itself is already a successful pipeline, regardless of what SA Rugby is doing and everybody else is doing as well. We definitely have our eye on the prize all the time, and that's to move somebody from a Clashes school into a Varsity space, not just to be a rugby player. Obviously, everybody can't be a Springbok. But to have these youth leave university financially savvy, with that discipline and the determination that being a sportsman or sportswoman gives you.
According to the National Education Infrastructure Management System, 37% of South African schools have football facilities, compared to just 5% with rugby. So why, with more players to choose from and better access, can football not achieve the same success?
Football is 10, 20 times bigger than rugby. So there's just so many kids playing it. So yes, it is, just because of scale, it is much more difficult. Look, football's had an interesting relationship with schools and with, you know, the education market in this country. And, you know, there was a wonderful organization going back, you know, 10, 15 years, Schools Football, which I think was doing a fantastic job. Software got involved, and for whatever reasons, I don't really understand what happened there, to be quite honest. And I'm sure there's somebody much better positioned that could explain that. That was taken out the system, and they largely saw football as a club game. You know, I think one of the beauties of the rugby system is that club and schools, et cetera, sort of operate within one ecosystem. Although probably largely dominated by schools, in the football sense, it's largely dominated by club.
One club in South Africa is an outlier and continues to produce top-tier football talent for the league and the national team, despite not having a schoolboy system to work from.
Clearly, the source food has to be given to the coaching staff that work tirelessly with the players behind us. We all are one. We're one family. And there's no coach that's his own team. We understand the process of the club, and each player belongs to the club. And our job is to make sure that each player goes through the processes to get to the top. It's an holistic take on as a club, because we believe there's a football aspect, there's a fitness aspect, as well as a cultural aspect as well that has to come together. We don't just teach the kids to play one style, and I think that's important. Unfortunately, the other clubs, they have their specific styles, and our players are adaptable. Right? And that's why we had so many players at previous national teams as well, and that's why teams come and buy our players. Currently, we've had 8 players called up to the under-20 national camp as well. And that shows that we're doing something right. 8 players, it's a pat on the back to the coaches behind us. Could you get 8 players called up? That's huge for us. Super Rugby and cricket has been developed over decades. The cultures and the upbringing has been basically over years. South African football at school level, we're not that involved. There's not that structure. And personally, my belief is that the club system is already up and running in South Africa, and there should be more emphasis from the national body in improving the club system and putting in standardization. So calling SuperSport United, we one of the PSL clubs, we have to have hold a specific standard. So call it A, B and C. So to get to an A level, if the SAFA has X amount of money, the A level academies get X amount of money from the body because of their production of players. And if you look at Europe, I think they work that way. Especially the UK. I think the academies are standardized to A level, B level, and C level. And they get reassessed. If they don't keep up to certain standards, they drop levels, which means they lose money. And obviously those clubs would want to stay up to those levels. So they keep producing, improving the technology, health, nutrition, diets, education of players. That becomes important. Look, it's an investment thing. I think we need to get bigger sponsors that are able to support and supply the clubs and the national body to improve the quality of football.
The Springbok pipeline, though imperfect, with ample room for growth, proves challenging to replicate. Its success, intertwined with South Africa's unique sporting culture, highlights the complexity of nurturing talent from schoolboy rugby to the international stage.
We've got big gaps in our system, there's no doubt. We're not going to catch everyone. It's not going to happen. And we're also not going to catch them at the right time. You know, something about catching talent is, one is you've got to see it, but you also need to see it at the right time when you can do something about it, nurture it, and do those sort of things.
You don't get to where you get to with our talent. The biggest thing for them is that rugby was sort of the escape route. And the only way of making a big in life, you need to marry that with hard work. You need to marry that with commitment. You need to marry that with staying focused, driven on what you want to achieve. I think they've probably laid a platform for those non-traditional, you know, playing schools in the country. I think if you come from those schools, if you make it, you're probably very, very lucky. But if you can just have married the talent with the hard work, you'll come through. You'll achieve all the dreams that you've ever wanted to.
It's clear that the Springbok pipeline is a beast in and of its own, with ups and downs and unique quirks. While it's not flawless, replicating its success is easier said than done. And as we've seen, it's not just about numbers and facilities. It's about heart and soul, which South Africans have plenty of.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. There was a short piece about the pipeline, basically, from a scholar to Springbok, and they raised some very, very interesting points that we are now going to dive in a little bit deeper. Don't forget, you can join the conversation in the studio at any time. That is 0832-888-401. And we do have a caller. Do call back if you had something to share with us. But one of the first points that they brought up was the Easter weekend tournaments. School Easter weekend tournaments, to be specific. And that is something that, you know, we like to learn a lot. We like to take a lot from our brothers and sisters down south. And that is something I definitely, definitely do think we should emulate as well, is the make it a cultural thing that every year people are looking forward to these school Easter tournaments. In this case, it's rugby, but it can be football. Obviously, we have the national tournament, really, and that is the Newspaper Cup, which acts as that as well. And lots of talent has been discovered from there without a doubt. But, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have more than one such tournament around the country, especially catered towards the schools. And then speaking of schools, they spoke about a school with 30 different sponsors. I'm tempted to say that's more than any professional outfit in Namibia. Perhaps if we take Cricket Namibia as a federation, they will probably be touching that number. Maybe a little more. Not too sure exactly how many they have. But they would be the only one that come close. So the point is, even in school sports, there's a sport business element to some of these things. And then the racial quotas. the requirement for national teams to be made up of a certain percentage of people of color, is what they said. And as far as I know, Namibia doesn't have such a rule implemented. I assume primarily because there's really no, there hasn't been a national team where, you know, the racial makeup is of question. I think statistically speaking, it will be quite difficult for a Namibian sport to pull off something like that. Even in the sports that people deem as quote unquote, you know, not for people of color. I think we don't have such a quota in place because we've never had such a problem. But interesting nonetheless. And that they said there are around 400,000 rugby players, school rugby players in South Africa. So that's essentially the population of Windhoek South Africa has just in rugby players. And that number is obviously larger for soccer players or football players, which is why they said it's harder to make it in football than rugby in South Africa. But going back to the festivals, they mentioned the F&B Classic Clash Festival, which we have something similar. We just have the Classic Clash. It's not really a festival, but you have certain schools going up against each other. But in South Africa, they bill it as a huge national thing, a huge, celebration of talent, another opportunity for the young players to showcase their talents. But it also forms part of a system, part of a pipeline, where they said that, you know, essentially the Classic Clashes exist to give players a platform to shine so that they can prove themselves and that they can compete in the Varsity Cup and Shield. So that is a grassroots system that has been created for the development of rugby players. Then they spoke about another festival that was more so geared towards schools in the townships, which something Namibia definitely needs to emulate, would be a huge success, I think, if it were to be emulated, if these festivals existed for schools in these type of areas. I can't recall now the company that they said is sponsoring that, but it sounded like it was more of an individual businessman that came to the front. But nonetheless, these such tournaments for the Classic Clash in particular created over 100 Springboks. So over 100 rugby players came through that system, went on to represent the national team at the highest level. And as we know, FNB also sponsors the Springboks themselves. So really, it's in their best interest to have such a platform, because the more successful the Springboks are, the better it makes them look that they're supporting the Springboks. You know, everyone wants to be associated with the winner. And with that said, speaking of FNB, we can listen to a conversation we had with FNB. Now, maybe we will listen to that on the other side of this.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back. And in the video that piece of content we took in earlier, they said obviously the one bank that is FNB Namibia can't do it alone. But nonetheless, let's hear from the Namibian segment of FNB and why they support sports, local sports. Apologies in advance for the background noise.
Just if you can start with, tell us why FNB feels so compelled to support Namibian sport. I mean, you guys support a number of sporting codes, so give us some insight into why it's important for FNB to do that.
I think it's important for any corporate in Namibia to get behind sport. Sport is a wonderful unifier. And if you just think about how excited we get when any of our teams or our players win.
We'll be right back.
Egameno jomau yerele koko marungura, kalishi ashike upsa kathi wapa uteknika, oliliwa omkundu wapa shigwana, upsa kathi wapaliko, no hashivuro oku ya moshi para uhupiro uongeshefa. Oshini momtumba go Namibia International Cyber Security Conference and Exhibition omvomao vigajo mirongo mbalina hamano. Iikondo epangero mahangano wapa umwene, uministeri wepangero ni ikondo ya yoroka no handimwe, onetamu ithanwa muhoroke komtumba omtitatu watumburu wa mete. Tekero, esikuwa milongo mbali naga alisikuwa mbali naga nega apiriri mwavigalio milongo mbali naga mano ekaroko Arembush Travel Lodge Movenduka. Oshiparashi kundathanwa okuanja gane kuyerele kombinga uko shoki wapa ungomba ano saiba hejin. Kena una oku ironge kithira omashongo oko marungura no marongo kekopopeko jerongitho jo marungura na iru inji. Koneka, omahangano ohandimwe ni kondo mbokata mkatuma akaliripo ya konda pantu ya tano, otamukape wa ompi pito yom tugumwe awedhu wapo hasho ashikeshoka pethimbo jom tumba ugo tungoka otaku kakarao VIP cyber gala dina nuyere lounji wa maisha angitho no mapura apuro kwa tatha na nayo konoraje tatu imwe onda tuya tano omgo igeali nenge ko email info@dstech.com.na nenge utarele pwe panja jao jopa ungomba ko www.dstech.com.na. Namibia International Cyber Security Conference and Exhibition Securing Namibia Digital Future.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni mondo tuto.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back.
To winning and the excitement you can imagine as we watch in the stadium arm in arm cheering along the people that we support in the sporting codes that we love. And that unity, what that does, how that breaks down barriers and reminds us we are one Namibia, is powerful. And because of the feeling that sport gives us the spectators, we want to ensure that we the spectators can also support sport. Government can't do it alone, and this is where corporates need to join hands, because when we all put whatever we can into the equation, it grows the pot. And the bigger the pot, the more that sporting code can grow. It means that the sports stars get better salaries. It means that they get better facilities. You know, Cricket Namibia is a wonderful example of exactly that. And we have supported to the extent that we possibly can, from the stadium being built, right through to the fact that today, our cricketers, men and women, earn a salary. This is their full-time job. Every single sporting code in Namibia should be able to say that. And when we get to that place in Namibia, then we know we've made it. And to get us there, it's going to require us joining hands in what we can do. We are not a sports investment organization.
Yeah.
We're a bank. So we do what we can to the extent that we can. And we feel very passionately about doing it, not only for the fact that it is a brand building exercise, but because of what we're doing for Namibia. Our philosophy and our ethos in our organization is to help build a globally competitive Namibia. And to do that, we have to support where we can to help the building of that, to help the infrastructure, to get us to that place where we can compete globally and where we can, as Namibians, link arm in arm in the stadium, cheering on our teams with such sense of pride that our sporting stars do bring us every time they go out to compete on the field.
And as you said, we are seated in the FNB Namibia Cricket Stadium, which obviously FNB has supported greatly. As a bank, do you guys see, or maybe which one do you value more, whether it's supporting the developmental side of sport or more so on the professional side?
You know, it's a difficult question because both have important merits. If we develop only, support into development, and then we don't have any way for these developed youth to grow to,
mm-hmm.
One-sided, it's also going to implode on itself. If we only develop, or if we only support the developed, the cricket stadiums, when we get there, we don't have a pipeline to get us to a place where we are rallying behind our international stars. And this exists in all sporting codes. So we have, for example, our mountain bike program that we support, which is really developmental.
Yeah.
Because as we support school kids in mountain biking activities and the competitions that give them the excitement and make passion and want to grow their own sporting skills so that they can compete at the next event, we create a pipeline for the next level of stars that are going to inspire those children to get to one day. But the two need each other. Without, if we are only supporting development, we're not going to get to a place where we can support, we can compete internationally and vice versa. So it's important to do what we can on both sides. It does, it makes it difficult because it waters down the investment to a degree. Because we can't be the only corporate doing it all. And we take what we can and we try and spread out as far and wide as possible. But the more we can get fully behind a sporting code and really empower that sporting code, the more that sporting code can deliver on that sense of unity and national pride that comes with winning the games and competing internationally.
And actually, I interviewed Roger Seun yesterday, and he spoke about how like crucial the FNB Mountain Bike League was in his cycling development. So there's a living testament to what you just described. And my last question is, in sports sponsorship, like in other countries, South Africa and, you know, first world countries, countries often invest in sport because they see, they've like mapped out a return on the investment. They say, okay, we're going to invest X amount of dollars, and in return, we'll get X amount of exposure, we'll get X amount of jersey sales or whatever it is. FNB Namibia, is that part of it as well, or is it more of a social responsibility kind of, like, is it more of a charity, if you get what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying, and in truth, it is more of the latter, and that's why we have our foundation, which is our CSR arm, together with the sponsorship, so everything that we're doing in that space is under one group of people that help roll that out. And the reason you also see, there are many organizations around the world that sponsor sporting codes purely for the brand building exercise. And when they do it like that, they will tend to go into one sporting code and own every single touch point around that sporting code. We don't do it that way. We try and take every dollar that we can and spread it around to as many sporting codes. So where you'll see, if you go to a game in South Africa that is sponsored by a big corporate, you will have some money going to that sporting code and then some other money going into people dancing around in branded gear so that you get the brand experience. You don't have that at any of the sporting codes that we support, unfortunately, because it means we can't get that same level of return on investment. But why we do that is, instead of taking and spitting out the dollars, we take every cent that we can to put back and to plow back into sport, because we believe passionately in the enablement that sport is. And maybe in the future, as Namibia's sport has grown to a level that it is on international, in the international space, Namibia should be able to say that. And when we get to that place in Namibia, then we know we've made it. We take every cent that we can to put back and to plow back into sport, because we believe passionately in the enablement that sport is. And maybe in the future, as Namibia's sport has grown to a level that it is on international, in the international spaces, then we could have that discussion. But right now, there's so much work to be done in the development of sport, in getting behind our sporting stars. The fact that, as I mentioned, so many of our sporting codes, our athletes that we cheer on the weekend, have jobs that they have to go to in the week to be able to afford that sport. That's heartbreaking, and that shows that there's still a lot of work to be done. And when that question is solved, when our sporting stars can fully commit in the week, they can do their training and their practices, and they don't need to have a job to support their family in, on all sporting codes, then we could discuss things like return on investment. But we're not there yet, so we've got a job to be done, and so that makes it more of a corporate social responsibility investment for us in the country.
That was FNB Communications Manager, FNB Namibia Communications Manager, chatting with us on why they support local sports. And hopefully many other local entities and corporations will follow suit. So let's take a short musical break, and then we'll be back with our next talking point.
Care that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Let's take a listen to our next talking point, which is about the reasons South African football is back on the rise after some years of disappointment, let's put it that way. Let's take a listen.
For the first time since 2002, South Africa have qualified for a World Cup. Of course, they hosted in 2010, blessing the world with the drone of vuvuzelas, but this is their first qualification since South Korea and Japan. And keep in mind, they managed to finish at the top of their group despite having a 3-point deduction. What a fantastic achievement. Just a quick word though, about a month ago, Peter suggested I do a video on South Africa's qualification and how South African football has kind of bounced back, right? So thank you, Peter, for the suggestion, which I am more than happy to do. Just a quick chat about South African football, because I've had a soft spot for South African football for a couple of years now, which really kicked off when I was researching and constructing my Roots of the Rivalry Soweto Derby video in February of 2023, and speaking to Newo and Shakes Rampidi, who you may know, about Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates. It opened up that world to me. From there, I started reading into Mamelodi Sundowns, who Shakes described as the Man City of South Africa for how dominant they were. That got me following the national team, their journey in the last AFCON in 2023, and their journey in this qualification cycle. I know I have quite a few subscribers from South Africa, so to you guys, a big congratulations. It's been a long journey to get to a point where you can afford to be excited about the state of South African football, from the league to the national team. So let's go through that now on how South African football kind of got back on their feet and boast one of the more exciting teams on the continent.
Nelson Mandela and Neil Tovey and the African Nations Cup belongs to South Africa for the next 2 years. What a magnificent day for the country.
Now, this moment from the 1996 AFCON final, absolutely massive for South Africa, not even from a football point of view. Well, of course, that was massive, don't get me wrong, but South Africa had been banned from international tournaments due to apartheid since the 50s. They were first banned by the African Football Confederation from competing in African Cup of Nations tournaments, and then in the 1960s by FIFA. Apartheid meant that South Africa would have to choose either an all-white team or all-black team, as racially mixed teams were prohibited. This was rightfully deemed completely unacceptable by the CAF in 1957 and by FIFA in 1961. Lifted in 63 and then reimposed in 64. Once apartheid was being dismantled in the early 1990s, a new South African Football Association was founded with multiracial teams, and they were readmitted into FIFA and could partake in international tournaments again. They fell short of qualifying for the 1994 World Cup, but 2 years later, South Africa hosted the 1996 AFCON, and of course, they won it. 2 years after that, they would finish as runners-up to Egypt and qualify for their first ever World Cup in 1998. They would also qualify for 2002, where they would get their first ever win at a World Cup tournament, beating Slovenia 1-0, but finishing third in the group in agonizing fashion. And that would be the last time that we would see South Africa at a World Cup, until they hosted in 2010, of course. But South Africa wasn't the growing power they had once been, as guys from the strong 1990s, late 1990s teams had been aging out. They had a couple of terrible AFCONs in the 2000s, one of which they didn't score a single goal in, and of course, they went out in the group stage at the 2010 World Cup. unfortunately. So that is the quick bullet points version of South African football since the early 1990s. This dip in form is understandable when you consider how the South African Football Association, or SAFA, was only established in 1991. You can get lucky with a generation of incredibly talented players where everything lines up for success. That can absolutely happen. But for sustained success, you need to have better organization. You need to have a strong domestic league to feed the national team. And again, the South African Football Federation was only established in 1991, the new version of it, that is. Speaking of having a strong league, the South African Premiership was only established in 1996, which was a combination of two previous football leagues in South Africa. So when you consider all of that, plus the politics of South Africa at the time, what they had just come out of as a nation, it's completely understandable that their national team took a major dip in form. But as professional football continued to develop, they began putting controls in place to ensure that South African talent was the priority. Look, this is similar to what we've talked about in other videos on Norway and Greece, but the measures put in place by South Africa were some of the most restrictive. Well, that's restrictive is a glass half empty view of it. They were the most beneficial to young South African talent. First off, in the leagues below the top flight, they started implementing various age and South African talent rules, such as back in 2016, the National First Division, below the Premiership, made a rule that 5 U23 South African players must be on the team sheet, and 2 must be on the pitch at all times. These have been changed and adjusted, but not differentiating too much from this directive to give young talent a chance. On top of this, there's also the PSL Reserve League, which is what you have seen in European nations as well. The top clubs have a U23 side that competes in a league against other U23 sides from the league. It was established in 2014 in order to develop South African talent. But what about when they got to the top flight? Well, in the Betway Premiership, that's the name of the top flight, teams cannot register more than 5 foreign players. And yes, Mamelodi Sundowns' dominance of that league is never what you want to see, 8 consecutive titles, but they dominate because of how they have run the club under Patrice Motsepe. And when the bar has been raised like that, past the former powers of Orlando Pirates and Kaizer Chiefs, then everyone else has to adapt to catch up to them. So the bar had been raised by Sundowns, and now everyone is chasing to catch up, raising their level to do so. Now we're seeing Sundowns do well at the continental level also, so they're leading the way for the rest of their rivals to follow. So you throw these youth initiatives with the growing strength of the Betway Premiership, increased professionalism amongst the clubs, and you begin to see the fruits of their labor in the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations, where South Africa, yes, largely made up of Sundowns players, but South Africa go on a great run, not just winning matches and advancing well, but nearly making the final, losing to Nigeria in a shootout in the semis. They would finish third, however, beating DR Congo in a shootout. Finishing was a bit of an issue in those final couple of matches for them. Their best finish since 1998 when they were runners-up. For the 2025 edition, they do have a tricky group playing alongside Egypt, Angola, and Zimbabwe, but confidence will be high.
Now the party can start! Hugo Broos has done it now!
This is a team that had a 3-point deduction for making the mistake of playing Mokoena when he was ineligible. And yet, South Africa managed to do their part in qualifying, topping their group with 18 points, losing twice, but one of which was that match that was awarded to Lesotho for the ineligible player being played. Since they've pulled it off, the 2025 AFCON in Morocco will provide an excellent warm-up for them. But qualifying was a fantastic feat in itself. It will be great to see South Africa at the World Cup. Depending on where they play, maybe I'll see them live. Who knows? If they come to Canada, why not? Well, then again, the prices are absolutely extortionate at this World Cup. What a shame. Anyways, guys, just a quick video to send my congratulations to the South Africans in the audience. One of my favorite stories of this qualification campaign and a team that I love watching. I cannot wait for AFCON now. As always,
you are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle. Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. There was a short piece on the reemergence of South African football. Some interesting points raised in there. And now we'll take a short musical break before we head on to our next talking point. We're going to change lanes a little bit. We're going to go to technology, and we'll dive into that on the other side of this.
Thank you.
are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. And as promised before the commercial break, we are moving things now to technology and dive into, can technology be the catalyst that is needed to boost, some would say save, African sports? And we will get into we'll hear from a conference actually that took place about, let's call it a year ago, a little over a year ago.
A relatively long conference. I hope it's been productive for everyone. My name is Lindy Ngwenya. I'm Managing Director of CSU Sports Management. When I established CSU back in 2013, a big driver for that was personal experience. Attending the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, coming to Cape Town and watching, to be honest, what was a stinker of a match, England versus Algeria, but really being struck by, to me, what seemed to be Africa being on the sort of a precipice of a big leap forward in terms of the sports industry. 12 years on from there, I think it's fair to say things haven't quite gone exactly to plan. There's spots of positive notes across the African sports industry, but we clearly got a lot of work to do. Let me give you some numbers. So global sports industry is currently valued at around 2% of global GDP. However, when you drill down into the African portion of that, the sports industry only comprises 0.5% of the continent's GDP. So why is that? There's lots of reasons we can cite, but fundamentally, apart from a few key markets, like here in South Africa, the home of the World Cup, and a few Northern African countries, essentially sport has not really been seen as a driver of economic activity. It's been very much largely seen as a recreational activity. And because of that, a lot of the leadership and the incumbents in there don't necessarily have the mindset to understand how to harness the opportunities there are in sport. Then when we put a digital prism on things, now, again, there's lots of positive noises and positive trends around internet access across the continent, but this is actually the reality of it as we talk now. 38% of people across the continent of Africa have access to the internet, compared to, obviously, a much higher global average of 68%. So one of the reasons I wanted to give this talk is because I don't want to be in a position maybe in 12 years' time from now, in 2037, of talking about how potentially the African sports industry missed the opportunities around digital transformation. So what I'll try to do is summarize fairly quickly what are the challenges. And I think anyone who's worked in the continent will know, will be quite familiar with the challenges. And certainly if you've attended the last day or two, you've probably heard them. So first of all, if you look top left, Africa does have a gender digital divide. In fact, there's a gender digital divide across all of the world, but in sub-Saharan Africa, it is the widest. So essentially, over 45% of men have internet access, barely 30% of females have that. And we know from a development perspective, economic development perspective, if half the population are hampered in their access to the opportunity to grow, that is going to have a detrimental effect across industry categories, not just sport. If you look bottom left, that really refers to the affordability of data. And data across the continent in a lot of countries is still very expensive. I guess this guy down here is probably a guy who put a bet yesterday on PSG beating Liverpool in the Champions League, and luckily he had the data that he could afford to put that bet on. Top right, obviously, we're looking at the aspect of upskilling on the digital side. Even if we do get the infrastructure in place, there is a huge population that needs to be educated and assisted in how to harness that and therefore grow the economies that we are looking for. And then fourthly, bottom right, on a little bit more of a sports-specific aspect. As I said at the beginning, the sports leadership has very much come from a background that isn't really kind of business and commercial focused. There's lots of new young leadership coming through, but they have to be given the opportunity to take some of those leadership seats to be able to apply their vision to drive forward the sports industry. Right, a little bit of a mid-speech quiz. Right, does anyone know who this man is? I'll give you 10 seconds to work it out. The winner can get my high-protein bar that I purchased at Pick and Pay this morning. No? Yeah, exactly. That's why I said 10 seconds. I didn't want the Google image searches. Okay, so my protein bar's safe. This guy is Auguste Comte. He was a French philosopher, lived in the early 1800s, I think till about 1857 when he died. He's basically credited with the oft-used quote that demography is destiny, right? And I'm sure, again, across the African continent, you've heard that quote. Demography is destiny, right? So the size and the composition of your population essentially will drive the future prospects of that particular country, or when we extrapolate it, obviously, across the continent of Africa, across the continent. Africa has a huge young population coming through and a growing population. So that can be a demographic dividend that will drive economic growth, not just in sports industry, but across the whole range of industries. However, unless we know how to harness it and build on that as actors within the industry, we're not going to reap the benefits. In fact, it will be a curse to have all of these young people who cannot be actively economically employed. So, again, I try to avoid using what I call buzzwords, so like macros. So I've tied to this slide the big levers. I don't want to use the word macro trends because everyone's sick and tired of hearing those sort of words. So these are the big levers that will drive, I think, the development across not just the sports industry, but across the continent. The youthquake that I've referred to, you've got a growing and very, very young population. The urbanization, as these people grow and want to look for work, they will tend to go into urban areas. And with the perspective of Africa, the urban areas is actually where the connectivity and the digital infrastructure is at its strongest. So that will also help to accelerate some of those opportunities. And then thirdly, clearly the actual digitalization itself. These young people, they're tech receptive. And I use the word receptive deliberately because I think the jump from being tech receptive to tech savvy involves that education, that upskilling, and that training piece. So let's move specifically into the context of sport then. So we know there's this youth quake. We can see the big trends that are going to drive that digital transformation or provide the optimal conditions for it. And in the business of sport, ultimately, it is the fans who are at the center of that ecosystem. And this is the real benefit for Africa because we have a growing fan base and we have a tech receptive that can be turned into a tech-enabled fan base. And that's the fan base that can drive and innovate on the business models across the sports ecosystem if we put the processes, the structures in place and provide that empowerment. As a specific example, you know, we have lots and lots of clubs and leagues in Africa. But actually, if you look across the continent, if you slice through specific countries, with a few exceptions, a lot of these leagues are weak. That's obviously a challenge, but at the same time, it's an opportunity because as a brand, as a company, you can create new competition formats without the sort of legacy resistance that you will get in more mature markets like Europe. So it's about thinking creatively about how we can use the new emerging fan in Africa, the future fan, to educate them, to invest in them so that they understand the opportunities from the digital world, and to start presenting to them new formats, collaborating with clubs and teams to help them to bring their fans closer. And this is just a basic example. I mean, one of the things that we've encountered as a company is we were talking to lots of US colleges who really wanted to hire African football talent, but they didn't know where to find the players. They didn't know where to get the information on the players, all of this stuff. So we created a platform called Aburu Africa that essentially we leveraged our own network on understanding of the sort of African football landscape to collect information and profiles of players, obviously put it on a platform and connect it directly into the US college system. And since we launched that platform in 2023, we've placed countless players into that college system, providing life-changing opportunities for football and education. This is just one small thing, but I'm using that as an illustration that it's activating and doing positive things that's really going to move the needle across Africa, rather than expecting someone else to kind of do it on our behalf. And let's get into the crux of it, really, which is, as I said before, it's about the fan. And there is a fan economy, and there is a new fan economy that we can all benefit from. Any brand or stakeholder that can benefit from the fan economy should look at investing in African sports long term. And invest in that sport, because by educating the fans, by empowering your fans, by empowering the talent, by working with the sports properties like the clubs and the leagues, long term, it's inevitable that that fan economy will be able to build up and drive to the point where it provides a genuine return on investment. I can't remember yesterday, I heard the word collaboration used a lot rather than kind of investment. And I really understand the sentiment of that, because that's exactly right. I feel if you decide that you're going to, as a brand, put some money in and, you know, X amount of time down the road, be asking what your return is, but you haven't actively look to put your shoulder to the wheel to activate that and make it happen around the empowerment side, that the money's not really going to go to any real benefit. So what we're looking at, obviously, is we have that captive potential future fan. As a brand or a stakeholder, the thing or the mindset we have to go to is, how do we educate? How do we upskill that fan population? And also in terms of business models, when we're working with clubs and leagues, I know there's been reluctance or there's been bad experience in the past of maybe a sponsor sponsoring a club or a federation and that money not really going into, you know, the right sort of things. So why don't we look at different things? Why don't we create joint ventures? These are new business and revenue streams that we can create. So a joint venture, for instance, with a governing body where the commercial and all the digital revenue can be in that particular body, and then there's a rev share to the governing body. That way, as a brand, you have control over, obviously, the finance side, but you can also input your expertise and knowledge to drive the business forward. So to summarize, I see it as a stepwise kind of process. Let's first of all, as stakeholders, people involved in the business of sport, democratize the acquisition of knowledge. Educate our fans. Remove some of that paywall and that gatekeeping around the education aspect, so they understand how to harness the technologies and the opportunities for digital transformation. Mission-orientated leadership. There's lots of young people coming through who have great vision, great energy, and actually do have the ability to drive things forward. So let's identify those and empower them. Encourage the constructive risk-taking. Let's look at public-private partnerships with the right public bodies. Let's look at joint ventures. Look at ways we can then develop these new business revenue streams, invest.
Get ready to embrace a world of possibilities at the University of Namibia with a community of ambitious students, researchers and innovators. Shape your future with a wide range of programs in agriculture, engineering, natural sciences, commerce and management, law, education, human sciences, health sciences or veterinary medicine. Apply online at unam.edu.na. UNAM, open your mind.
And obviously the reason why is because In the sports space, we can also leapfrog legacy structures in Africa. We do not have many hard-baked, long-standing sports franchises in the same way as many other parts of the world that may restrict our ability to innovate and create new business models around the new fan economy. So let's do that. Let's work together. And like my final call to arms to you will be, no more complaining about, oh, the sports governing bodies, they haven't got any vision, they don't know what they're doing. Let's look at how we can provide those solutions, as I've already set out in this particular speech. So hopefully I've given you a little bit of fruit and determination to get involved, encourage you that there is a return in this continent, but you have to think on a more long-term basis. And if you've got any further questions, I'm more than happy to have a conversation after this presentation. Thank you for your
time. Yes, there was a presentation on how technology can be used to create economies in sport. And now, speaking of economies, we'll look at one sport that has implemented some of these things, and that is, as I started the show with, basketball. There's a reason the National Basketball Association is on the continent. And this conversation here will get into some of that.
Setting up for a big play, the continent's sports economy is dishing out opportunities, and basketball is looking for its investment move. We hear from NBA Africa CEO Claire Akamazi on the league's growing ambition. Plus, as institutional investors increasingly turn their eyes to Africa's booming sports and entertainment markets, we speak with Ibrahim Sanya, executive chairman of Silverbacks Holdings, about how changing ownership rules could open up new pools of capital for various leagues.
These changes that the NBA is proposing is going to make the market bigger, will provide for predictable income, and basically more institutional capital will probably show up.
And why the combination of demographics and technology makes Africa ripe for investment, according to Helios founder Topoe Lawani. Welcome to Next Africa. I'm Jennifer Zapasaja. The global sports economy is rapidly expanding, with Africa predicted to be among the fastest growing regions in the world. Take basketball. From Hakeem Olajuwon to Joel Embiid, for decades, the continent has produced show-stopping talent who frequently go on to play in the West. Well, now the NBA is doubling down on its efforts to grow the game across the continent, with plans to expand its regional league, homegrown talent, and start selling more franchises. Speaking at the Bloomberg Philanthropies Global Forum, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said he sees a major opportunity to build the sport on the continent.
Around Africa, for example, I would say that's one continent where they have not experienced the level of sport investment as other places in the world. But on the other hand, I mean, it's just an amazing data point that the UN is estimating in just 25 years from now, 40% of the young people in the world will live in Africa.
Right.
And so we see as the NBA an amazing opportunity.
NBA Africa CEO Claire Akamazi echoed a similar sentiment when we sat down. Akamazi said the league's vision goes far beyond what happens on the court.
The goal is to catalyze economic development using sports and basketball in particular. And so if we are going to catalyze economic development, then we have to look at the whole ecosystem, which is beyond the court. So the court is where action takes place, but the court has very few players that are going to be playing on that court. Look at the NBA, only 500 players on the NBA in the whole world. And so the very best will go to the NBA because it's the elite league that we have. But the goal is to also develop those other opportunities that come with investment in basketball. Mm. So there is the league, NBM. There's the BAL. We have, you can play professionally in the BAL. But there's so many jobs and opportunities around all of that. From, you know, if you're a data analyst, if you're a marketing, you know, expert, if you're a technology expert, if you're into AI, if you're into hospitality, restaurant, security, transportation, all those industries thrive when the league thrives. And so this is where we've seen real impact. We've seen in the first 4 years of BL being in existence, we've seen close to 40,000 jobs being created. We've seen $250 million worth of GDP in just the the first 4 years playing in four countries. Imagine how much more we are going to do, because we are going to do it. It's not if or maybe, we're actually going to do it. Imagine how much more we're going to do when we play in 10 countries, 12 countries, 20 countries. It's going to be a huge, powerful platform for job creation, economic development, and dreams for those who want to play professionally.
How do you get there? That's ambitious.
Yes, it's ambitious, but I think the first 5 years of the BL has shown that it's possible. The first 5 years for me was a very powerful proof of concept. In the first 5 years of NBA investing in the Basketball Africa League in Africa, we've shown, A, that when you build infrastructure, they can be utilized well. So let's build more infrastructure. Because today we estimate only about five countries have arenas that can actually host the NBA standard games. Let's build more of those. That is the work that we have to do. Building an arena is capital intensive. It requires investors. It requires governments to work with us. But since we've done it in some countries, let's do it in other countries. It's also going to require more, you know, success stories being shared on what's possible, like Kaman Malwaj. So the girls and boys in school can actually tap into the potential and talent they have to make this happen. But for me, the first thing is really developing the infrastructure, because the infrastructure is what is going to open up all of this, as we've seen in countries like Senegal, South Africa, Rwanda, where jobs are being created because of Basketball Africa League.
Are you eyeing certain markets then for that expansion? Of course, you know, we've talked about the infrastructure part of it and how critical that is. Not all countries, of course, have arenas at this point. What is NBA Africa eyeing, at least in the near term, to expand?
So first of all, we think the potential is in many countries of the African continent. But we see a momentum growing in South Africa. We've been going to play there a couple of times. The media market and the purchasing power in South Africa is quite strong. And we think that's something that can allow entertainment to be consumed. We see talent in Senegal. We see it in Nigeria.
As far as players.
But also the economies consuming. We don't have an arena in Nigeria, but we know that the day we have an arena in Nigeria, it's going to be a whole different game story. We have an arena in Senegal. We have good talent in Senegal. Angola. Angola is the only country in sub-Saharan Africa that has actually won a championship of BAL. Angola has, they have the arenas. They have a very strong basketball culture. They've been a champion, but they've also gone to semifinals almost every year. So you can see from the basketball angle, but also from the fandom angle, they're very strong. North African countries are very strong as well. Egypt has won championship for the BAL twice. Libya just won, a team from Libya. Before that, we had Tunisia. And then in East Africa, we see Rwanda and Kenya really, you know, coming. Rwanda has invested a lot in the sports city. We like to give it as an example because it has all the infrastructure. And it has brought its talent from a very low base, and now they finished third, which is something that you wouldn't have imagined 5 years ago. Kenya has a lot of potential as well. We have teams being invested in. I just think that today, the potential and momentum we see is at an all-time high. We haven't seen this before, and I think the future is just going to get better.
Are any of those near-term expansion plans, or are they a little bit further out, some of those countries you were just mentioning there?
So we are working on that already now. Nairobi, Kenya, for example, had their first team last year during the BAL. Before that, they had never had a team in the BAL. And so these are times that these are plans that we're actually already implementing. And as we go into the future, we actually hope to see more countries really come up with teams that will be playing in the league.
And you called it a startup, or was a startup. Is it still a startup?
So we started during COVID, and then it's 5 years. But already when you see the growth on YouTube last year, we had about, you know, close to 4 million people watching the games on YouTube. And other than Africa, we had a lot of people watching from the US. The US is one of the markets that we actually have people watching our games through our NBA app. We've had, in terms of people that attend the games in arenas, yes, the arenas are only four. We wish we could play in 10, 12, and we'll get there. But even with that, we've seen the number of people that go to watch games from year one grow from 45,000 to 140,000 in less than 4 years.
Still ahead, institutional investors are turning their eyes to Africa's fast-growing sports and entertainment markets. We speak to Ibrahim Sanya, executive chairman of Silverbacks Holdings, on the challenges and opportunities for investors and what's next for sports franchising across the continent. Welcome back to Next Africa. I'm Jennifer Zabasadja in Johannesburg. The business of sports in Africa is gaining momentum, driven by rising audiences, global partnerships, and a wave of major events across the continent. According to Oliver Wyman, Africa's sports market is already worth more than $12 billion and could exceed $20 billion by 2035. And with major events like AFCON and the Cricket World Cup on the horizon, that growth could accelerate even faster. And as more capital flows into various corners of sports and entertainment, investors are exploring new models, including sports franchising, that could capture more momentum. Ibrahim Sanya, executive chairman of Silverbacks Holdings, is one of them. Here's what he told us.
Tech, sports, entertainment, and fashion became as we focused our lens on, because what we wanted to do was follow a simple idea that we take very seriously, which is that with the advent of technology today, there are businesses based in the African continent that will demonstrate the capability to capture growing pools of foreign-based revenues. And that's true in technology. If you look at the fintech sectors, you have a lot of businesses that capture such stream of income because of remittances. If you look at, as well, entertainment, you have a lot of movies made in Nigeria that basically are produced in local currency or in South Africa, but they sell the movie to Netflix and collect the proceeds in dollars. So in fashion, the same, a lot of designers on the continent sell in Neiman Marcus and across a lot of retailers overseas and collect foreign income. In the case of sport, the same has proven true with the arrival of the NBA. And when they came, the team that was selected after the establishment of NBA Africa were able to participate in a tournament called BAL, where each of the participation fees were denominated in dollars. And that allowed us to take a keen interest and take an investment position in a team in South Africa. But we've also expanded that beyond basketball in also fighting leagues in Nigeria, whereby the same is true. There are some fights in the African continent. However, the content is consumed by a lot of people in the U.S. and in South Africa, in Latin America, especially Brazil.
So it sounds like this could potentially be a benefit for at least basketball. I think if we look at some of the other sports, though, that you're invested in, as you were mentioning there, if they don't have an NBA behind them, could this still ultimately be beneficial for the African sports ecosystem in your mind?
For us as an investor, this is a good development because the continent needs these types of platform to come in and provide recurring income. So if you look at the NBA at large, it's one of these global leagues that basically provides recurring income to 30 teams, which are franchised over there. But the same is true with the NFL, the Hockey League, and two other leagues. In essence, if you wanted to look at American major leagues, like families, each league is a massive family that have a set amount of children. And each children gets 7 to 10 years of pre-agreed revenue that emanate from either the media right or sometimes a complement that comes from a salary cap. So that allows an investor such as ourselves to come into a situation where you get a clear visibility on future revenue. And that's what makes institutional capital highly attracted to such propositions. So what the NBA is preparing to do on the continent will enable more predictability for these properties in terms of revenue.
What can you tell us about your average return on some of these investments that you've made, at least in sports right now?
So in sports, we cannot speak of return so far. Our company, as you know, started this journey in technology. We started investing in 2019. Probably 80% of our portfolio is in technology, most dominantly in technology, fintech. And there, if you want to see the difference in technology, our return are 8 times cash after 9 exits, which is an IRR of 60%. And what we've been able to, how we've been able to do it is by starting an emerging fund managers program where we're backing 9 fund managers, boldly look at deep and try to find the best performing companies that meet our investment criteria. And then we graduate them into our direct portfolio. So our single largest investment behind one company is in fintech. It's a company called Move, where we've put well over 30 million in that company alone. When you now compare that to sports, we still have not put to work more than $2 million in a single sports company. So I would say that the days of getting returns from sport properties, we're still very early days, but a few institutional investors like ourselves have started putting a small amount of capital and hoping that these changes that the NBA is proposing is going to make the market bigger, will provide path for predictable income, and basically more institutional capital will probably show up.
Up next, Africa-focused private equity firm Helios Investment Partners has been making big bets on the continent for more than 2 decades. Founder and managing partner Topoe Lawani explains where he's finding opportunity amid Africa's shifting investment landscape. That's coming up on Next Africa.
Sometimes in Africa, we really underrate what we have. And it's time we look at ourselves, you know, like I want to do more on this continent. It's time they pay sports attention on this continent. You know, I think we have to be aggressive.
Masai Ujiri, former Toronto Raptors president and co-founder of Giants of Africa, is calling on governments and investors to give sports the attention it deserves, as he sees the creative industries as a medium to create opportunities and jobs for Africa's youth. Masai has been instrumental in growing the game across the continent, from hosting youth basketball camps to developing state-of-the-art facilities that nurture the next generation of African talent. He's partnered with Helios Investment Partners, one of Africa's largest private equity firms, to create Zaria Group, which is building sports and entertainment infrastructure across the continent. Helios established its sports and entertainment group back in 2021 and has also invested in NBA Africa and PFL Africa. But beyond sports, the PE firm is known for major investments in Helios Towers, Vivo Energy, and Fari, which are among its most notable exits. I spoke with Topoe Lawani, founder and managing partner of Helios Investment Partners, about where he's finding opportunity amid Africa's shifting investment landscape.
I think that this is a very exciting time for private equity investing in Africa for a couple of reasons. I think what I would say is that there are the increasing interest in Africa derives from 2 sources. I think you've got push factors and you've got pull factors. I think on the push side, you know, in the 15 or 12 or 13 years between 2010, the global financial crisis, and a couple of years ago, you know, you had real outperformance in U.S. and European private equity. But, you know, substantially all of that outperformance was due to, you know, falling interest rates, which of course made debt, you know, more available and cheaper. And also, you know, with declining discount rates, valuation multiples were going ever higher. So now with that era somewhat behind us, or I think obviously behind us, investors are now interested in markets where that are first uncorrelated to the markets of the United States and Western Europe, and where the underlying rates of growth are just stronger. And so naturally that leads to markets, you know, Africa, for example, being, you know, prime amongst them. In recent years, India has been capturing a lot of interest, but, you know, as the relationship between India and the United States seems to be fraying, a lot more interest is actually being diverted towards the African market. So what we see is growing investor interest in Africa. And on the pull side of it, in terms of the attractiveness of the African market, first of all, as you know, we have extremely interesting and exciting demographics, which, create sort of a good baseload of underlying growth. And we have the trend of urbanization as well, which drives productivity increases. Now, you might argue that neither of those two things are new. They've been happening for quite some time, and they'll happen for, for a bit long, for more than the rest of our lifetimes. But what is really new, actually, is technology. And this overlay of technology on the demographics and urbanization trend is really having profound impact across many, many industries in Africa. It's lowering the cost of doing business. You look at financial services, for example, where rather than building bank branches and, having people queue up at counters, all of the transactions and savings can happen on the mobile phone. So costs are coming down, addressable markets are growing, and you're really seeing the investable universe for private equity expanding quite dramatically. So that's what excites us. We invest at the intersection of demographics and urbanization trend on the one hand, and technology and innovation on the other hand. So within that space, that overlapping space, we see huge amounts of opportunity, and we're extremely excited.
Do you think, Topwe, though, that there needs to be more development of the secondary markets across the continent in order for, I know Helios is an Africa-focused firm, but for other firms to look at some of the opportunities here, especially in comparison to what they could potentially get in developed markets?
The way we view our role in private equity, certainly in Africa, is our job is to actually identify opportunities, create, put businesses around them, create, strong, well-governed, growing, cash-generative businesses, and hand them over to the, to the rightful owner, which is usually the public markets or strategic investors, strategic buyers. And so when we look at the history of our firm over the last 20 years that we've been doing this, I would say probably 50% of our exits have been to strategic buyers, global multinationals. And about 40% has been, in public markets. We've listed businesses on the Nigerian Stock Exchange, the Kenyan Stock Exchange in Nairobi, the Egyptian Stock Exchange. But on the other hand, we've also exited three businesses on the London Stock Exchange, being the larger, more geographically diversified companies. So the development of a secondary market, is a sign of a maturing market, but we don't think it's necessarily the sign of a healthy market. And so we're quite happy with the quality of exits that we have and the transitionary role that we play as providers of capital, know-how, and value add to build really high quality businesses.
Are you expecting more exits in the near term? I know you can't divulge too much, but what can you tell us?
Yeah. We are. In fact, we just in the last couple of weeks signed an agreement to sell one of our businesses actually in Nigeria, a very large business, for a meaningful amount of capital. It's been quite a successful investment for us. It's in the energy transition gas infrastructure space, which is a space that we continue to believe in, although for various reasons, strategic reasons, we have opted to no longer invest in that sector. But, we're very proud of that investment. It's created a real champion, and we think it's got a lot of scope to expand, not just within the Nigerian borders, but also across the West African region.
So I imagine that's on the horizon then for Helios, potentially to go back into Nigeria?
Absolutely. We've got an excellent pipeline now, a pretty full pipeline, actually, of investment opportunities. Nigeria is let's say, punching at its weight in that pipeline. But also other places. I mentioned the investment we just made in Egypt in the data center space. We've actually just, signed another investment, which is, I believe, in the public domain, to acquire the largest exporter of frozen strawberries, from that country. Interestingly enough, Egypt is actually the largest exporter globally of frozen strawberries. This company in particular is the leading player in that space. And in a world where there's a lot of concern about tariffs and trade barriers, we think from a pure comparative advantage standpoint, that business, stacks up very well. So we're excited about Egypt. Morocco, we've been quite busy in Morocco over the last several years. That remains a very interesting market, as does Kenya, which you alluded to earlier.
And that's Next Africa for this month. But don't forget our weekly podcast for more of what's happening across the continent, available on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you usually.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. And as we wrap up, do remember that tomorrow the Villager e-paper will be published. So what that means is if you haven't already, you have to head, open up your mobile device, open WhatsApp, save the following number. That's 081-241-44, 081-200-4144. Save it and send it a message that you would like to subscribe to the Villager newspaper so that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, you will get the latest edition pinged directly to your mobile device. And if you'd like to receive it via email as well, make sure you send your email address and you will receive it in your inbox every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. This has been another good edition of the Eagle Sports Zone as we wait for the matriarch who will be following us after this. We'll see you same time, same place on Easter Sunday with another engaging show for you.
Come back and come back. Shabbat, 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 Shabbat,